This is the Damage Report. Welcome. I'm Ben Glebe, filling in for John Iadarola, who is out today. This is going to be a wild one. We got some stories that you won't believe, except you will believe them because they're crazily true. And I'm joined to get through the madness by my co-host today. You know this man from the Politics and Paper podcast, and he's a Rebel HQ contributor. It's Jackson White. What's up, Jackson?
Man, I'm doing good. It's good to be here. Santa Claus was quite generous. I've been running around with my little nieces. I warned them of reverse Santa Claus. That was hilarious. I was at the breakfast table telling them reverse Santa's gonna come take all their presents if they don't finish those cinnamon rolls. So I've been having a good time, man.
That's a great idea. I like that. I like that a lot.
Better finish that plate.
I like that a lot. I had a great Christmas as a Jewish man. I played tennis and thought about the lack of gifts that I got, but I did get one Hanukkah gift at my White Elephant exchange, because we're keeping it simple these days. I got a set of cocktail glasses, which is perfect because I personally need to get drunk to get through the reality that is the world these days.
That's a good investment. It has utility, you know what I'm saying? That's a good grown man investment right there. That's a good present. I like it.
Thank you for understanding me. Somebody gets me.
I dig it, man.
I love it. Let's get into our first story, and it is an intense one. Cruel, dangerous, and shameful. The White House scolds Governor Abbott over Christmas Eve migrant drop-off in freezing temperatures. On Christmas Day, how lovely. An initial 2 busloads of migrants from Texas were taken to local shelters in Washington, D.C., according to an administration official. More buses then arrived outside Vice President Kamala Harris's residents late Saturday evening. A CNN team saw migrants being dropped off, with some migrants wearing only t-shirts in the below freezing weather. They were then given blankets and put on another bus that went to a local church. Temperatures dropped to 18 degrees Fahrenheit in DC. Amy Fisher, a volunteer with the Migrant Solidarity Mutual Aid Network, which has been receiving migrants sent to DC since the spring, said the organization had been prepared for Saturday night's arrival, having been informed about it earlier by an NGO worker working at the border in Texas. The arrivals included asylum seekers from Ecuador, Cuba, Nicaragua, Venezuela, Peru, and Colombia, according to Fisher, who told CNN the buses were supposed to go to New York, but were diverted to DC due to the weather. Busloads of migrants have been arriving in Washington weekly since April. Tatiana Laborde, SAMU First Responses Managing Director, the nonprofit that's responsible for assisting the migrants, released a statement. Laborde said most migrants were aware of the buses' destinations, and she said about 60% were headed to New York, either to shelters or to stay with friends and family. She described this as a pattern we've been seeing over the past couple of months. Migrants bound for New York City spent 5 days on buses after getting stuck in the winter storm. They were in disarray, including children and a pregnant woman. It was the longest ride that anyone has experienced since the buses started arriving here at the Port Authority, said Malu, who was among a group of volunteers who welcomed the migrants upon their arrival. Their legs were cramped up, hobbling, feet swollen. People were hungry, tired. Really, they were in disarray. Malu recalled that an 8.5-month pregnant woman was among the new arrivals. Luckily, we were able to get her some medical attention. The White House condemned the Texas governor after migrants were dropped off outside the VP's house. Quote, abandoned children on the side of the road in below freezing temperatures. Governor Abbott abandoned children on Christmas Eve without coordinating with any federal or local authorities. White House Representative Abdullah Hassan said in a statement, this was a cruel, dangerous, and shameful stunt. As we've repeatedly said, we're willing to work with anyone, Republican or Democrat alike, on real solutions, like the comprehensive immigration reform and border security measures President Biden sent to Congress on his first day in office, Hassan added. But these political games accomplish nothing and only put lives in danger. Another heartless, shameful ploy by the Texas governor, while at the same time, you do understand that their systems are overwhelmed and they have an influx of migrants that they don't know what to do with. And so some part of me understands they're trying to send a message to other parts of the country that don't suffer these consequences directly and say, let's all bear the burden. That is a point I think that has some merit. To do it in this way, to do it on Christmas Eve, to send people to sub-freezing temperatures without the proper clothing, to send people where they don't expect to go, those things are definitely wrong. And it's an issue we have to address as a country. We have not had significant immigration reform in over 30 years. And so both sides claim this is an issue that they want to tackle. The Democrats always claim the high ground on it, and they don't pull stunts like this, but at the same time, they're not getting the job done of passing any sort of meaningful reform. Jackson, I'm curious your take on this.
Well, it's one of the interesting things just in terms of how politics works, you know, when we have an issue that's a real issue, but people don't, you know, handle it in a humane way, is that despite the fact that Greg Abbott, you know, sent these migrants in freezing cold temperatures to Kamala's house and all these places, you know, there's really no underlying logic to it other than to virtue signal to the base. However, Republicans are still gonna, you know, gain ground with this. Oftentimes when we see Latinos or different people shifting and voting for Republicans, and it's like, why would they vote for this? Why would they do this? Well, oftentimes it's because the Democratic Party simply isn't stepping in issues that make, you know, whether it be migration issues, whether it be wage issues. Republican Party, they typically will have a chance to say, look what the Democrats did as Biden took that L with the railway unions. So it's the losses like that that even though we can point at this and say this was callous, this made no sense, Republicans are still gonna be able to gain ground with this. But also a bigger point is that this is how powerful culture is. This is how powerful rhetoric is, because Greg Abbott, he's just virtue signaling to the base. But because Fox News and these right wing outlets are constantly dehumanizing migrants, this is what they want to see. So, you know, it's just really a sick cycle. But the Democrats aren't stepping up sufficiently to do anything about it.
Yeah, that's a strong point, because you just see the effectiveness of the dehumanization of these migrants. It happens all the time. I replied to a very heartless tweet from Tommy Lahren, who I've sparred with and debated many times in the past, who just simply wrote, you gotta love this. What a Christmas gift for the vice president. Send more. I mean, like they're literally packages and not human beings. Truly disgusting. And we haven't seen the last of it. Thankfully, there are people with a heart on the other side that were able to receive them, give them shelter, give them some warmth, give them some medical attention. And we'll see. Hopefully, this comes to a head, at least to the fact, to the end result, that we might be able to actually pass some meaningful reform finally in this country. That would be worthwhile.
To get down to the nitty and gritty, I'm not a fraud. I'm not a criminal who defrauded the entire country and made up this fictional character and ran for Congress. I've been around a long time. I mean, a lot of people know me. They know who I am. They've done business dealings with me. I'm not going to make excuses for this, but a lot of people overstate in their resumes or twist a little bit or ingratiate themselves. I'm not saying I'm not guilty of that.
He's not going to make excuses for it while he lists 47 excuses and also uses three words that aren't words there. Let's get down to the nit and gritty of it. I'm not going to ingratiate myself, and I didn't make up some fictional character. He did make up a fictional word, however. That, of course, was Republican Congressman-elect George Santos of New York admitting he lied about his credentials during a Monday interview with the most reputable source he could choose, the New York Post. It seems everything he was accused of lying about, his education, work history, personal life, religion, people he knew, is that all? All of it seems indeed were lies. New York Representative-elect George Santos confessed on Monday to a multitude of lies he made on the campaign trail, including about his education and work experience, but he denied that he claimed to be Jewish, according to the Jerusalem Post. Santos, who gave an interview exclusively to the New York Post, insisted the controversy won't deter him from serving out his 2-year term in Congress after winning his election in November in one of the 4 New York congressional districts flipped by the GOP. Of course, it won't deter him from serving out his term. He's a Republican. They thrive on this. He probably is going to get promoted, be put as the head of every committee. He pulls off lies, he wins elections. This is the gold standard for the modern day Republican Party. He went on and said things he probably didn't even have to say, but he said it nonetheless. Quote, "I am not a criminal. This controversy will not deter me from having good legislative success. I will be effective. I will be good. I never claimed to be Jewish. I am Catholic. Because I learned my maternal family had a Jewish background, I said I was Jew-ish." Literally the joke that every Jewish boy makes when he's 7 years old. I'm not Jewish, I'm Jew-ish. It's the stupidest statement. This man is an embarrassment. And again, he fits in perfectly in today's GOP. Santos's professional biography was called into question earlier this month after the New York Times, a slightly more reputable paper, reported that he misrepresented a number of claims, including where he attended college and his alleged employment history with high profile Wall Street firms. Quote, "My sins here are embellishing my resume. I'm sorry," Santos said on Monday. The Times reporting called into question Santos' work history, education, personal life, and involvement with certain charities even. He confirmed the reporting, including the fact that he was married to a woman for 5 years in spite of running as a gay man. "I dated women in the past," he said. "I married a woman. It's personal stuff." Sure it is, except when you misrepresent who you are, get in office, and then come clean just right after. During his interview with the Post, Santos also called his past claims about working for Goldman Sachs and Citigroup a poor choice of words. He actually worked for a company called Linkbridge and was never affiliated with either bank. "I will be clearer about that," Santos said. "It was stated poorly," as reported by Kip Jones and Mediaite. I love very much that he thinks it's a poor choice of words to completely invent that you worked for companies. You understand, as a Republican candidate, wanting to claim you worked for Goldman Sachs, because that's the only way to get everyone in the Republican Party aroused. As The Daily Show with Jon Stewart once called Goldman Sachs, or as it's more properly known in GOP circles, Goldman Sachs. They need that. They need that cred to believe somebody's going to be greedy enough, corrupt enough to serve their interests. He made it up, and that kind of made up for lost time in a way, because he might not have the resume, but he does have the grit to say and do whatever it takes. Truth be damned. Santos also admitted he never graduated from Baruch College or anywhere else. "I didn't graduate from any institution of higher learning," he told the Post. "I'm embarrassed and sorry for having embellished my resume." Santos concluded, "We do stupid things in life." Sure, people do stupid things, like getting a little too buzzed at a party, having to call an Uber, and keeping your lot and your car in a pay lot, and you can show up and it's towed in the morning. Stuff like that. People don't invent entire identities, lie about every single part of their history, and then act as though, "Oh, I just kind of made a little tweak to my resume." But it's just the new norm for the Republican Party these days. Jackson White, please weigh in.
Yeah, man, it's like, you know, like everybody lies on their resume. Like maybe, you know, maybe you actually worked at a company for 9 months and you say you worked there for 12 months. That's like the gauge of the normal lying on the resume. But this dude, like, he just threw his name in a like smorgasbord and shook it up with a bunch of random words and whatever like was on the other side, where he just went around the house and took all the loose drugs. "I don't know what this pill is, but I'm gonna crush it up and I'm gonna roll it in this blunt and I'm gonna smoke it up. Write that down, bro." Like type of session, like everything about this dude's life was fake. When I first heard about him, because I wasn't really paying too much close attention to it, but it was just like, oh man. And he's not deterred from serving his term. I mean, but like you said, why should he be? This is the Republican Party and he made his way there. But I mean, like literally everything that he could have lied about, he lied about. But you know, if he does serve his term, this is gonna make for some great content, because he's not gonna stop. He just lies, that's what he does.
Yep. It's going to be a short time till he is Speaker of the House and is a leader of the ilk of Kevin McCarthy, who we will get to in a moment, but not right now, because it's time for a break. Don't go anywhere. We have much more TDR when we get BAC. K. Stick around. We are back on the damage report. John Iadarola is out. Bengley is in. Jackson White is in. We got quite the show unfolding before your very eyes. Let's start this block with a little Marjorie Taylor Greene. Good boy.
The congresswoman is suggesting that you, Congressman Biggs, and others are misleading the base. But when I talk to many in Washington, D.C., like Russ Vogt, who knows the Hill very well, they suggest that it's the other way around. What's going on here?
Well, you know, I love Marjorie, but here, I mean, she's kind of crossed a Rubicon there. She's calling us liars and saying we're misleading. But here's the whole deal. The parliamentary process for electing a speaker goes like this. It's designed for the majority party to win. That's simply the way it's set up. That's why you have the denominator system where it's whoever votes, you gotta get a majority of whoever votes, not the body. It's not a majority of the quorum, it's the majority of whoever votes. So if the majority party does what it's supposed to do, they'll win.
God, do they have an ability to speak a lot of words that mean a whole lot of zero. That was GOP Rep Andy Biggs slamming Marjorie Taylor Greene over her support for Kevin McCarthy as speaker, but soft slamming her, then saying a bunch of nothing. I love her, but she's crossed a line you cannot return from, but still I'm in love. To paraphrase Biggs, Republicans have a Never Kevin 5, a strange name that could have worked more on, that includes Biggs, Rep Bob Good from Virginia, Matt Rosendale from Montana, Ralph Norman from South Carolina, and Matt Gaetz from Florida, attempting to thwart a McCarthy speakership victory. That anti-McCarthy GOP opposition force has since found themselves locking horns with a familiar face and once close ally, Green. Marjorie is not America first, says Stu Peters, far-right radio host, but regrettably a faker and a liar who raised millions claiming she would impeach Biden and now backs a man for speaker who refuses to impeach Biden. You gotta love how much they want to just get revenge for Trump's two impeachments. You're gonna impeach Biden based on what? Based on following the law? Even if you don't think he's accomplishing your policy goals that you wish he was, impeach him based on what? What has the man done that is against the Constitution, that is against his oath of office? Not a damn thing. Gaetz and Green are at war over this though, having even posted dueling op-eds. Rep Marjorie Taylor Greene's Twitter with the highlights. Let's start with my dear friend Matt Gaetz. Many of his attacks are comparisons to Paul Ryan. It's quite ironic given Matt's very first vote in Congress was for Paul Ryan as speaker, even when we all knew Ryan would never deliver the MAGA agenda. Why are those five lawmakers deceiving conservatives? I've been asking them for well over a month. The truth is they have no plan. It's an empty promise, which is why I'm speaking out. For anyone questioning Kevin, all you have to do is look at his public statements and promises. He's on record with the most conservative plan of any potential speaker in decades, not because he wants the gavel, but because he actually wants to deliver. Wow, that is a load of garbage. All you gotta do is look at his public statements that constantly shift as the man is without any sort of fortitude. And that's the point made moments later in his op-ed by Rep Matt Gaetz. Kevin McCarthy sticks his wet finger in the air to decide what position to take. Leaders don't wait to see what the crowd wants. Leaders also don't take orders from lobbyists. This is who Kevin is. In sports, when the team loses games it is supposed to win, the coach gets fired. In business, when earnings vastly miss projections, the CEO is replaced. In Republican politics, a promotion shouldn't be failure's chaser. I do love that Matt Gaetz used a drinking heavily analogy for his political analogy there, considering some of his past. Every single Republican in Congress knows that Kevin does not actually believe in anything. He has no ideology. Some conservatives are using this fact to convince themselves that he is the right leader for the moment. As McCarthy is so weak, he'll promise anything to anyone. Gates also took shots at McCarthy, not time, not alcohol shots, for his relationship with Jeff Miller, a confidant and advisor who is a registered lobbyist for Apple and Amazon. I don't think he minds that he's a lobbyist just for those particular companies he doesn't like. He further blamed the Republican leader for the GOP's disappointing 2022 midterm election results, noting that McCarthy predicted as large as a 20 plus seat majority when in reality Republicans will hold the House 222 to 213 and only a 9 seat swing. So you got infighting. You got Marjorie Taylor Greene causing discord and making the Republican Party even less cohesive. You love to see it. Jackson, how happy does this make?
Oh, this makes me quite joyous, quite joyous. My melancholy has fled my spirit. but no, it's just, well, first of all, I love how my man was like, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene, she's crossed the Rubicon with this because my name's now involved. Like she's never crossed the Rubicon with any of the million other crazy and insane things that she does. But the bottom line is that the Republican Party doesn't have a plan. And, you know, interestingly enough, they defeated themselves. The whole party defeated itself in 2022. And going into the 2024 presidential elections, it's looking like they're going to be doing a whole lot of the same. Donald Trump isn't just going to back out of the election unless he's physically forced in jail, and he'll still be making noise from there. He'll still be finding ways, and whether it's him or his remaining supporters, to pull support away from people like Ron DeSantis or whoever else is running. So the Republican Party's really a mess. That doesn't mean that, you know, they still took the House, so it doesn't mean that they are totally incapable of pushing forth their agenda, as we know they are through the Supreme Court, the court system in general. But most of the chances that the Democrats, and more importantly, progressives have moving forward is the fact that the Republican Party is in such disarray right now. So I say, let's get better candidates in office everywhere we can at every level of government.
No doubt, no doubt. And it's just so clear to me as well how blatant the politics is and how much Marjorie Taylor Greene is just more and more ingratiating herself even into the establishment Republican Party. I don't know at this point what's better or worse. Obviously, the less far right that these people become, the better. But at the same time, the more you work within the power structure, the more powerful the structure gets. You know, it doesn't escape my memory that it was just a short while ago that Kevin McCarthy, the man that she is defending so vehemently, took her off all of her committee assignments, stripped her of all power officially in her role for just a large number of incendiary and irresponsible comments. And the tables turn. Politics does make such strange bedfellows. And if I were able to point my Jewish space laser at anybody, it would be at the two of them to get them to work out their differences. It's a peaceful space laser. I don't know if we ever discussed that. Marjorie didn't really explain. It's a laser that brings peace to all the children of all the land, especially
laser.
That's correct. It's a hippie laser.
Yeah.
It also wraps around trees. It hugs trees. It's very nice. Do you think McCarthy's going to get the speakership? Is it a foregone conclusion in your eyes, Jackson?
Probably so. I mean, the majority, why wouldn't he? You know what I mean? People have been pushing him for that way for a while, and it would be rather surprising if he didn't. And it's really not like the Republican Party has any other rising stars that really can compete with just his general establishment within the establishment of the GOP. So, you know, I mean, what are they really? Who else? Matt Gaetz, especially with the case that's still pending against him, just that reputation. Anybody in the Marjorie Taylor Greene camp or the Lauren Boberts, the Republican Party's not going to make them front facing. They'll take as much advantage of them as they can in terms of just winning elections in districts where they like that. But I mean, come on. And Matt Gaetz and people like him, they know that there's really nobody else with his seniority or authority. So he's just making noise because he can.
Yeah, there's Rumble, maybe Jim Jordan. And I spell his first name G-Y-M if you look at his scandals and his past and the cover-ups that he's been part of. The only positive to a Jim Jordan speakership would be that the Republican caucus would save a lot of money on suit jackets. He really does not like to wear a suit jacket.
Yeah, you know, I never pointed that out, but you're right. He always looks like he never I've never seen him in a jacket.
He thinks rolling up his sleeves literally means just rolling up your sleeves, and that's all the work you have to get done.
Yeah,
I've rolled up my sleeves today. Am I done? Can I go home now? And of course, you do see how responsible these actions are, how much of a ripple effect these actions have, rather, in the Republican Party so quickly. Look at Kevin McCarthy, already a man who was very powerful in the Republican Party, and he had it within his power to stop Trump. After Jan 6, when he was angry, when he was on that secret recording speaking the truth, he had the ability to crush Trump right down right then. And instead, when he visited Mar-a-Lago a couple of weeks after the election, he brought him right back into the mainstream accepted Republican Party. And we have to continue living this national nightmare. So it will be frightening to see what a McCarthy speakership will do, but a little bit of comfort in my soul, at least, that the far right doesn't want him to be speaker. I don't know. Maybe to some degree, some amount of evil will be slowed. That's the best we can hope for on that side of the aisle these days. I think it's time for our next story. New York, Governor Kathy Hochul, Democrat, nominated a conservative anti-abortion judge after promising she would protect reproductive rights. As of now, Hochul has not given a statement as to her reasoning for the appointment. You heard it. New York Governor Kathy Hochul on Thursday nominated Hector D. LaSalle, a conservative jurist who has sided with Crisis Pregnancy Centers, or CPCs, to lead the state's highest court for a 14-year term. You have to wonder if she's appointing people who support CPCs. Is she on PCP? That's the question going through my mind. It's pure speculation, but I'd like to get to the bottom of it. LaSalle was one of 7 candidates submitted to the governor by the State Commission on Judicial Nomination. But in a Monday letter, nearly 50 law professors urged Hochul to not pick LaSalle to be chief judge of the New York State Court of Appeals because of his, quote, cavalier attitude towards reproductive rights, hostility to organized labor, and a worrying insensitivity to due process. Other than that, he's a real nice guy, so he's got that going for him. Here's one reason they're concerned about his judicial record. In 2010, the New York City Council held hearings into CPCs and determined that one of them, expectant mother care, was practicing medicine without a license. On the basis of that finding, the New York Attorney General served it with a subpoena to learn more about its operations. To remind you, these CPCs are these conservative organizations that purport to be providing pregnancy planning and family planning care, but instead are there to mislead and pull people away from their own bodily autonomy rights and making decisions on their own. Justice LaSalle intervened in this case to shield the CPC from the application of healthcare licensing laws. The opinion stated that the Attorney General could not get the advertisements and promotional literature, brochures and pamphlets that the CPC provided or disseminated to the public in New York State, or the list of CPC's funders, even after court review. The opinion Justice LaSalle joined concluded that the information was not important or relevant enough to the Attorney General's investigation to require disclosure, even to the court. I mean, that is shady-ish if you ever heard any. Not even to give them access to the brochures the general public could get? What are you hiding, baby? It's imperative that New York judges appreciate the importance of the right to choose and the many different fraudulent subterfuges anti-choice activists deploy, as written in a letter from law professors reported by Jezebel. What has Hochul said previously about abortion rights? Was she ambiguous? Did she make it seem like maybe she would be open to appointing so-called pro-life judges? Well, after Roe v. Wade was overturned, Hochul said the state would be, quote, a safe harbor for abortion patients and created a $35 million fund for abortion clinics to help them handle the coming tide of out-of-state patients, like the Louisiana woman who was forced to travel 1,400 miles to New York for an abortion. Hochul called the overturning of Roe repulsive at every level. Yet, this is what happened. Jackson, what reason possibly would Hochul be approving this person to the highest spot on the bench in her state?
I think that instances like this really go to show that the money in the system is really what makes the decisions at the end of the day. Because when you have a lot of bureaucracy and when you have a lot of layers with any type of hierarchy, regardless, you're going to need to be able to count on your other managers. You're going to be able to need to count on whoever it is that's operating. Hochul, whether she knows it or not, allowed this judge, whether she really checked his background or not, it doesn't matter. Her nominating this person is completely contradictory to the statements that she made. But again, oftentimes people in these positions, it's just part of their career. They raise money all the time. They're used to the money in the system. They're surrounded by it. They swim in it. It's nothing to them. So again, a lot of these nominations that we see, you know, it can be easy and accurate to point our finger at people in specific positions, but really it's just the money making the decisions. And that's the biggest problem with our system at large, is because oftentimes the people who we elect to be in these positions, they don't make no decisions. The people who've been putting money in that seat have been putting money in that seat for decades. So that's really the biggest issue here.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point. And also, it just, I fear that the tide of public sentiment of outrage against the overturning of Roe v. Wade is waning. I think people are adjusting to this new normal, and we can't let that happen because these are human rights that are being taken away. To some degree, it makes me much more glad that I live in a state that at least is a true safe harbor here in California. And you know, that does point out the very large gulf sometimes between states, and that states' rights are still a very important part of this country. And you sometimes wonder, why do we have to keep fighting for other states that don't allow the same freedoms to their people in a country that has the freedom to decide state by state a lot of these issues? And then you see something like this happen in New York and you realize, well, that's why, because it slips in. It slips in everywhere. There are these Trojan horses that are not even going to allow you to use Trojans. We'll get to that part of the story in a second. But these people that don't want to stop, that do want to stop, rather, people expressing their own true freedom and instead want to impose their vision of the world on others. And it's a good chance to remind all of you that if you find yourself in a situation, a state, a family, a circumstance, that you are not being given your full access to your own human rights, to your ability to make your own decisions for your life, there are options. You can now, thankfully, instead of, God forbid, having to go to dangerous back alley abortions, you can go to a website called plancpills.org, plancpills.org, and get abortion medication sent to you. It's safe and easy to do, to use, and you can take care of your own life and make your own decisions that way without the long arm of the government. A lot of people that are against government overreach on the right side of the aisle, as I've said before, have no issue with government interreach, reaching right into your body. So don't let that happen. Control your own destiny on that, because look, it's happening everywhere, not even just abortion. As we warned, there would be things that would roll back other rights. There would be legislation passed that will take, there'll be decisions, rulings from judges that will take more of your rights away. And it's happening again now. Of course, Texas leads the way in this regressive garbage. A judge now says minors need parental permission to even get on birth control. Hence the Trojans statement a minute ago. U.S. District Judge Matthew Kaczmarek, an appointee of former President Trump, ruled that minors should be required to seek parental consent to get birth control, because parents have a fundamental right to control and direct the upbringing of their minor children. Already in the state of Texas, minors nearly always have to obtain parental consent to get birth control. Title 10 clinics are the only exception to this, as they aren't allowed to require parental permission or notify parents about minors getting birth control. Title X is a federal program that offers cost-free and confidential contraception to anyone regardless of age or income. The state has just 176 Title X clinics, however, serving its 254 counties. and teens without access to a car or money to travel to them may struggle to access them. This decision from the district court was prompted by a lawsuit from Alexander Deanda, a father of three whose complaint says he's raising each of his daughters in accordance with Christian teaching on matters of sexuality, which requires unmarried children to practice abstinence and refrain from sexual intercourse until marriage. Well, good for you and your Bible. Good for you and your decision to raise your children a particular religious way based on a book written thousands of years ago. That's your right to do. What's not your right is to pass laws to make your religion and your religious beliefs the barometer and the guidepost for all of us. That's why this country has a separation of church and state, despite what lawmakers on the right are trying to bring us toward these days. You don't get to do that. That's not your purview. Stay in your lane. You want to raise your daughters a certain way, raise them that way. And see if once they're aware of the freedom that this country grants to its citizens, if you still have that control over them or not. Do you? Give it your best shot, but keep it within the confines of your own family, not across this nation. Nan Whaley, Director of External Affairs, the Texas-based Youth Reproductive Justice Group, Jane's Due Process, or JDP, said the district court ruling violates young people's self-determination and bodily autonomy. Damn right it does. At a time when, quote, the demand for birth control skyrocketed amongst young people in the wake of the Supreme Court's decision overturning Roe versus Wade. Kaczmarek's ruling hasn't yet taken effect, as he didn't issue an injunction to immediately prohibit all minors from getting birth control without parental permission. Per the Texas Tribune, his ruling is expected to be challenged. If you live in Texas, my advice, stock up, get it quick. You never know what's going to happen. You never know what's going to happen in the country these days when our laws and our rights are being adjusted, restricted, pulled back, taken away at every corner, at every turn. When you still have a freedom, take advantage of it. Jackson White.
Yeah, well, so first of all, you know, people who set these types of preferences, or, you know, people who want to ban pornography and stuff like that, it's like, you know, it's really just a reflection of people just having unhealthy relationships with themselves and unhealthy sex lives and whatever that means, because pretending like human beings aren't sexual creatures is ridiculous. You know, pretending like I have full mastery over my urges. No, you don't. You know, and again, it's like thinking about children and what they may do. Why are you thinking so much about how young teenagers' sex lives, first and foremost? But that aside, obviously, we know that this type of approach simply doesn't work. People have sex, and therefore, we should be encouraging them to do it safely. We should be encouraging them to learn about how it works, to know who they're sleeping with, et cetera, et cetera. Instead, obviously, we know that this would just lead to more pregnancies, more STDs, and what have you. On top of, you know, for the most part, and, you know, if, you know, if you're what, 17, 18, who cares how old you are? May not be any of your parents' business. What if you don't have a good relationship with them in the first place? I mean, I still don't necessarily just openly talk about my sex life with my parents. I'm 30 years old, you know? So it's just, clearly it's an overreach. And, you know, like you said, you know, that's great that you want to raise your daughter or your son in a certain type of way. That's great that your religious doctrine is written in a certain type of way. But we're sexual creatures, and so we need to treat ourselves as such.
And Jackson, as a man slightly older than you, let me just say, I don't know that you ever need to get to the place where you're openly talking about your sex life with your parents.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely, I agree.
Who could have seen all of this coming? You know, it would be great if we had a leader that was able to see into the future. Oh, wait, maybe we do. Donald Trump wished everyone a Merry Christmas, which was really nice of him to do. Of course, he did it in the most Trump way ever, posting on his Fisher-Price version of a social network. Merry Christmas to everyone, okay? Including the radical left Marxists that are trying to destroy our country. The Federal Bureau of Investigation that is illegally coercing and paying social and lamestream media to push for a mentally disabled Democrat over the brilliant, clairvoyant, and USA-loving Donald J. Trump. And of course, the Department of Injustice, which appointed a special quote-unquote prosecutor who, together with his wife and family hates, quote, Trump, close quote, more than any other person on earth. Love to all. You gotta love the love to all he throws in there at the end. You also gotta love how Trump will never understand the purpose of quotations, why they're there, or when to use them. Putting your own name in quotes is pretty strange. And also calling yourself clairvoyant is maybe one of the most absurd things ever done by this already absurd, incredibly absurd man. I'd also like to point out his third grade level puns, his garbage pail kids level of insults with names these days. The Department of Injustice. Oh, slam, you reversed it, dog. Way to do it. But clairvoyant takes the cake. This man who's predicted nothing well in his life, as pointed out by Love and Lemonade on Twitter, saying, you would think the best clairvoyant would be able to avoid so many bankruptcies. Touche. Or Hoodlum at Not Hoodlum, very contradictory handles, saying Captain Gravy Pants is claiming, the best nickname possible for him, is claiming on Trump Social that he's brilliant and clairvoyant. Then he knew he lost the election before anybody else did. It's a strong point. It's a very strong point. Do you think, Jackson, that Trump has clairvoyant powers? Do you think he's suddenly developed an ability to see into the future?
Well, the only clairvoyance I've ever seen from him is his comments on crypto. But then again, that's just because he's too old to believe in crypto anyway. So other than that, no. Well, but have you seen that mashup video where he's like, nobody knows this like me. Nobody can do this like me. Where like no one knows anything like him. He's the best at everything. I mean, it just goes without. So pretty much, you know, the fake phone calls he was given, like where he was calling that news outlet, like Donald Trump's a total stud. He totally sleeps with all the babes. All the babes want him. Like, you know, just everything about him. So this is just another example of that. He's just a complete, he's a clown. He's a goofball. But America elected him as president. So what does that say about us?
It's so true, because with the amount of clownship this man is getting to further and further levels of clownitude every day, you would think the circus would be more popular when it comes into town. You would think we'd be selling out circuses. Barnum and Bailey would be at the top of the Dow Jones Industrial at some point, because people love a good clown. But maybe it's waning, because a new Fox News poll shows that 58% of voters are not glad that Trump is running again. Only 39% are glad in a very recent poll. So the waning of his popularity at least does seem to be continuing. That is not election winning numbers. Not even glad someone's running. That's not even a vote. That is like glad he's even in the mix, and it's only 39%. Does not bode well for his non-existent, newly relaunched, brand new campaign. And of course, Trump melted down the other day in maybe even next level fashion. Looking at him would be real nervous, red in the face even more than his typical orange over the final Jan 6 report. Take a look at this.
We wanted security, we wanted safety. There was no insurrection, and there wasn't going to be an insurrection. It was made up by these sick people. Nancy Pelosi and the DC mayor refused. If they'd listened to me, my recommendation, none of this would have happened, and you wouldn't have heard about January 6th as we know it. And they didn't discuss the other thing, the reason that everybody went there, the election, which was a corrupt disaster. They did not discuss why the doors were flung wide open for people to walk right in. And they didn't discuss the role of federal informants. Most importantly, the Unselect Committee did not produce a single shred of evidence that I in any way intended or wanted violence at our Capitol.
Yes, they did, bro. They provided 800 pages of evidence of that. It's a report. If you knew how to read, you'd be able to brush yourself up on it. You'd have never heard of January 6th, really, except for your tweet saying, come to the Capitol on January 6th, it's gonna be wild, or saying, let's fight like hell, go down there and fight hard, or the fact that you, during a press conference, this is an often overlooked fact, when asked if you would commit to a peaceful transfer of power months before the election, said, we'll have to see. No guarantees, I promise a peaceful transfer of power. Okay? Okay? I mean, it's unreal that people still, I'm sorry, that hand was too big. It should have looked more like this. I promise a peaceful transfer of power. Okay? I'm the best. I got great big hands. And that's how it goes down. Lawrence Tribe, a Harvard law professor, said Trump's lawyer should consider having him plead insanity at trial when his trial inevitably does come up, which is my favorite thing I've ever heard. Look at the man, more unhinged by the day. You gotta love seeing him squirm. I do indeed. Think about it. Have dreams of sugar plum fairies and Trump squirming while we take a short break. The Damage Report. We'll be right back. We're back on the Damage Report. Ben Glebe here with Jackson White. I'm filling in today for John Iadarola. This is his show. If you're new here, I'm not normally here, so relax. It'll be even better when John's back. Okay, I'm just a cheap substitute. And you should accept no substitutes. People know that. It's time for another story that brings the GOP to lower and lower levels. There's no bottom for these people. Election denying, super sore loser Carrie Lake is drowning in her own lake of tears. Judge Peter Thompson ruled on December 24th against Lake's filing the 2022 election had been tampered with. Carrie Crimea Lake then posted and then deleted a conspiracy about the judge, attacking his ethics, of course, evidence free. Mark Elias posted a few days ago, I asked what conspiracy theory Carrie Lake would offer for why she lost her election contest lawsuit. It's more insane than I ever predicted. Carrie tweets, the dismissal of Carrie Lake's election lawsuit shows voter disenfranchisement no longer matters. Continuing the third person all these people are doing lately, at @rach_ic, legal experts believe his decision by Judge Thompson was ghostwritten. They suspect top left-wing attorneys like Mark Elias emailed him what to say. They suspect, they think, they hope. None of it's true, none of it's based in anything. Of course, Judge Thompson's the one that found the court did not have any clear evidence of widespread misconduct that could have impacted the results of the 2022 midterm election. During a two-day trial, Lake's team focused on ballot printer issues in Maricopa County, asking the judge to declare her governor or order a revote in the county. That's your options. Declare the loser governor or do an expensive revote. Because of why? Because of printer problems. Printers run out of ink, Carrie. That's not election fraud, just the nature of printers. We all know that. A turnabout is fair game, and hopefully justice will boomerang right back at Lake's democracy ruining ways. Maricopa County has filed a motion on Monday for sanctions against former Republican gubernatorial candidate Carrie Lake. The motion was joined later on Monday by Arizona's governor-elect Katie Hobbs. I like that she's stepping on to that motion. She defeated Lake and is now seeking attorney's fees and expenses, requesting about $37,000 paid as a sanction. All told, however, it could be much higher than that. Between Hobbs and several lawyers for the county, Lake and her attorneys could face up to $700,000 in sanctions to cover total fees, according to Justin Lum. That would be a little good bit of justice. Carrie Lake, of course, says she will appeal the ruling. The only appeal this disgusting person could possibly ever have, because it sure ain't there in her personality. Jackson, we got a minute left. What are your thoughts on this?
I mean, it's always astounding to me when people like this run for office in the first place, let alone the whole strategy being ridiculous, that, you know, anyone with two pairs of eyes or a half an eye could have seen that the strategy was a losing one. You know, people like Carrie Lake, who was a successful broadcaster before she even got in office, she didn't need to do this. You know, you look at what's her name, Dr. Oz. Now his career really, I mean, he's still got money, but moving forward, he just really isn't in a good position brand wise, and he never should have stepped foot in the race. So Carrie Lake really is just embarrassed, but there's nothing she can do to erase the fact that she ran a ridiculous campaign on a foundation of lies and she just lost. And so now moving forward, you know, she's going to look like a joke and a clown, but that's the best she made for herself.
That is indeed. Jackson, thanks for being with me. Thank you all for being with me. We got much more show in the aftermath coming up right now.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.